Welcome to Hacker News Daily, the brief podcast that brings you the top stories from the tech world every day. I'm Mia.
And I'm Milo. Let's jump into what's making headlines.
AII's Grok build goes open source, OpenAI loses an EU trademark dispute, and AI voice fraud is outpacing every defense in seconds.
SpaceX bonds slide toward junk status, and someone's running Gemma 4 on a 13-year-old Xeon with no GPU whatsoever.
Plus, new open weights models called Codex Micro and Inkling land. And there's a fun one. ShadCN UI components that mimic Claude Code, Codex, and Grok.
We've also got open source memory for coding agents synced over SSH, a sequel to Duskers, and a fascinating piece on when AI becomes a family member.
And Firefox compiled to WebAssembly? Yeah, it runs in the browser now. A packed show ahead. Let's get into it.
Hell, I think it was in so anyway, Dole. Think. For its Juth as Draven Van, man accomplishing stitch time to get on the GAC and Saw for EVE completely for the sweet bay gift arms. Think. Fent.
Right, and this is not a side experiment. The repository, authored by an ex-AI engineer, explicitly states that the company uses Grok build behind its own production deployments. It is the same custom tooling they use to compile the Grok model itself.
So what is actually in the box? A build server, a formatter, code-checking linters, all packaged as a drop-in, zero-config replacement for standard Python subslitus. It also has optional integration for compiled languages like Rust.
The practical promise here is that AI developers can streamline complex, multi-language codebases without writing configuration files or maintaining 100 pipelines. And the launch got traction fast, over 230 upvotes on Hacker News, with discussions centering on xAI's unusual transparency strategy.
And that strategy is worth noting in context. xAI previously released the Grok-1 model weights and networking libraries. Now they are releasing build infrastructure. Competitors like OpenAI and Anthropic keep their build tooling proprietary, so this further positions xAI to attract community contributors.
Looking ahead, the project roadmap hints at additional language support and tighter integration with xAI's model training pipelines. So for anyone tracking how AI tooling infrastructure evolves, this is a useful signal.
Separately, OpenAI has just lost a trademark dispute at the European Union's General Court in Luxembourg.
This is a significant legal setback. The court ruled that the word OpenAI is purely descriptive for certain software and IT goods and services. In plain terms, it lacks the distinctiveness required for trademark protection under EU law.
The ruling upholds an earlier refusal by the EU Intellectual Property Office. OpenAI, the US company behind ChatGPT, had challenged that decision. The court basically said the name describes what they do rather than uniquely identifying the company.
And the implications are real. This signals growing legal friction over AI-related branding in Europe. OpenAI can still appeal to the European Court of Justice, but as it stands, the company may have to rethink its trademark enforcement and registration strategy across the entire EU market.
For a company whose brand is its primary public identity, losing exclusive rights to that name in a major market is more than a paperwork problem. It affects how they protect their products and messaging.
Now to a story that hits close to home. AI voice cloning can now power a complete theft in roughly 3 seconds of sampled audio. That compresses the attack window far below the reaction time of conventional fraud defenses.
There is a reported case out of Dover, Florida. A retiree received a call from what sounded exactly like her daughter, April, crying, saying she had hit a pregnant woman while texting. Then a man claiming to be an attorney took over, demanded $15,000 in cash for bail, and told her not to tell the bank.
And she didn't. The emotional shock and perfect vocal mimicry collapsed her decision-making instantly. She withdrew the money and handed it to a courier within the hour.
Security researchers warn these voice clones now require almost no speaker enrollment time and can be generated live during a call. That makes real-time authentication or callback protocols far less effective as standalone defenses.
What this exposes is the gap between human trust reflexes and the slow, often manual verification steps banks and families typically rely on. The fraud outruns every conventional check.
Little. Shifting to markets. A SpaceX bond is now trading roughly 10% below its original issue price, and that discount is edging it toward what market participants call junk bond status.
This is a signal that creditors are demanding substantially higher compensation for perceived risk, despite SpaceX's high-profile operational successes and launch cadence. The bond decline means any new debt SpaceX might seek would likely carry steeper interest costs.
And for a capital-intensive business pursuing expensive next-generation projects, Starship, Starlink expansion, eventual Mars ambitions, that raises the effective price of capital at a sensitive time.
Institutional buyers appear to be weighing several factors. SpaceX is still private, so financial disclosures are limited. There are heavy reinvestment demands, execution risk on technically challenging milestones, and uncertain paths to liquidity for bondholders. All this against a backdrop of tighter monetary conditions and volatile, high-yield markets.
So the slide functions as a real-time referendum. It asks whether SpaceX's operational momentum adequately compensates fixed-income holders for the risks embedded in its capital structure. And it may foreshadow how future private company mega-deals are scrutinized when public equity enthusiasm does not translate into debt market comfort.
Now, here is something that sounds improbable. A developer demonstrated running Google's Gemma 4, a 26 billion parameter mixture of experts model, on a repurposed HP Store virtual server from roughly 2013. No GPU.
The machine has duals on E5000-690V2 IV bridge processors, uses DDR3 memory, and supports only the AVX1 instruction set. It is missing the newer AVX2 and FMA3 instructions that accelerate modern inference. Despite all that, it achieved about 5 tokens per second.
The developer, writing on NeoMind Labs, describes that as reading speed. And the feat highlights how advances in inference optimization are lowering the hardware barrier for powerful open weights models, allowing them to run on aging CPU-only infrastructure.
The practical implications are significant for organizations that want to deploy capable AI on existing servers or in edge environments where GPU access is limited. You do not need an expensive GPU cluster.
The underlying trend suggests continued efficiency gains could further expand where and how large language models are used, shifting focus from raw compute availability to software-level performance engineering.
Two notable open-weight releases arrived from very different directions. Let's start with the bigger one. From Thinking Machines comes Inkling, a massive generalist system released with full weights. It is a mixture of experts transformer with 975 billion total parameters, though far fewer are active at any given moment.
The team trained it from scratch and explicitly frames the release as part of a mission to let people make AI their own. It is designed for agentic coding, tool use, and controllable reasoning effort, and it is available through their Tinker platform and Hugging Face.
The second release is from OpenAI, and it is not what you would expect. They are shipping something called Codex Micro, but it is not a language model. It is a physical hardware product, a specialized keyboard developed with WorkLouder and sold through the OpenAI supply company for $230.
It is billed as a command center for agentic work. The keyboard uses live RGB feedback to show what software agents are doing and features tactile controls mapped to Codex actions, plus an extra icon keyset.
So, on one hand, open-weight research pushes frontier-scale models into the community's hands. On the other, controlling agent workflows is becoming a consumer product category with tangible hardware interfaces. Two very different bets on where developer tools are heading.
Staying with developer tools, a new open-source UI toolkit called Brainless has surfaced, and it packages ShadCN-style components that visually clone the interfaces of three AI coding tools, Claude Code, OpenAI Codex, and Grok.
The project was posted by Ben Swerslow and treats Terminal and Editor UI Chrome as brand surface. It offers exact visual replicas that developers can drop into their own apps. The examples copy recognizable details like Claude Code's agent prompt layout, Codex's model and directory display, and Grok's visual structure.
A demo shows someone running a single command to pull a block straight into a next DOM.js page. The result logs as added one block, two files, with a quick update to the page file. It makes the polished AI tool aesthetic available as composable, themable building blocks.
For developers building on top of 1,000 workflows, the signal is that interface mimicry is becoming both a design shortcut and a way to borrow the trust and familiarity of known AI products. The question to watch is whether Brainless expands to more agent interfaces and how official design systems respond when open-source clones of their look and feel spread without permission.
One more tool worth noting. A new open-source project called Deja Vu from Developkovichul gives cruding agents persistent memory that follows developers across sessions without relying on any cloud service.
The friction it addresses is real. AI coding assistants today typically reset each session, forcing you to rebrief them repeatedly on what you are working on. Deja Vu synchronizes state over standard SSH connections, storing memory as a local file system-based record of prior interactions, decisions, and codebase understanding.
When you SSH into a remote machine, the memory syncs, so the agent picks up right where it left off. Because it is self-hosted and transportable, it avoids vendor lock-in and the privacy concerns tied to cloud-based alternatives.
Early signals show it works with common agent frameworks, though integration depth and security hardening are areas to watch. The next useful signal will be whether widely used coding agent platforms adopt or interoperate with this local-first memory model. That could shift how developers manage long-running AI-assisted projects.
Duskers, the cult classic horror game where you pilot scavenger drones through a command-line interface, is officially getting a sequel. Misfits Attic announced Duskers 2.0 during PC Gamer's PC Gaming Show, complete with a teaser trailer that had fans of the original cheering online.
And if you never played the first one, the hook was brilliant. You type commands instead of clicking buttons, and the tension comes from what the terminal reveals or doesn't reveal. It became an award-winning cult hit precisely because that interface made you feel like a real operator, not a player holding a controller.
The sequel is being funded by Stray Signal, a project fund run by Max McGuire. That gives the indie studio the backing to revive its vision without, presumably, having to compromise on what made the original so distinctive.
The timing isn't random either. This year marks the 10-year anniversary of the original Duskers, and designer Tim Keenan shared early pen and paper prototypes that shaped the game. You can see the systems-driven DNA right there in those sketches. Misfits Attic is already pointing fans to wishlist Duskers 2.0 on Steam, so active development is clearly underway.
A recent feature in the New Yorker profiles households where the AI assistant is no longer just a scheduler or a speaker. People are giving these systems names, including them in daily rituals, and in some cases, consoling them during software updates.
That detail about consolation really lands. Users describe feeling guilt when they mute the assistant. Kids form one-way emotional bonds and treat that polite, affirming voice as a confidant. Researchers interviewed in the piece cautioned that these attachments, while they can ease loneliness, also substitute for human interaction.
And there are real vulnerabilities here. Intense distress during service outages, an unwillingness to upgrade a system perceived as a person. The piece points to a question that regulators and designers have not resolved. Should we encourage that emotional design or dampen it, especially when the product is a commercial platform with a profit motive.
The next signal to watch is expected usage data from major AI providers. How often are users choosing relationship-oriented voice modes versus strictly task-oriented ones? That number will tell us a lot about where this is heading.
A developer has pulled off something that sounds almost like a magic trick. They compiled the entire Firefox browser to WebAssembly, and now it runs inside another browser tab.
So you open Chrome, navigate to a page, and there's Firefox, the real interface, rendered to an HTML canvas element. Gecko, all the UI components, and the SpiderMonkey JavaScript engine are all running inside a WebAssembly sandbox. That is a fully functional browser inside a browser.
The creator built this as a research project to test the limits of WebAssembly. It cost over 25,000 tokens in debugging and JIT research using Opus and Fable language models. For network connectivity, they use the WISP protocol to tunnel TCP traffic over WebSockets, and the connection is described as fully end-to-end encrypted.
There is also a novel WebAssembly to JavaScript just-in-time compiler created specifically to speed up site loading in this environment. Now, the creator acknowledges this is experimental and has also built a more practical, lower-memory alternative called browser.js. But as a proof point, this signals that complex desktop-class applications with their own runtimes can realistically live in a browser tab.
The Siegel Family Endowment has published a paper arguing that governments, companies, and nonprofits should all invest in free and open-source AI, framing it as a public interest imperative rather than just a technical preference.
The report warns about the growing concentration of AI power in a few hands and says open-source models can ensure more equitable access. But the online discussion around this paper reveals a real fault line. One commenter pushed back hard, saying they would rather see public money spent on universal childcare, Medicare for all, or free school lunches than on technology the American public largely distrusts.
That sparked a back and forth. Another participant responded that wealth redistribution has limits and that creating new wealth through innovation is more sustainable. That drew a sharp reply. If wealth creation is the goal, why did we move toward winner-takes-all centralization instead of broad-based prosperity?
And then someone noted that healthcare is the biggest expense for small and medium businesses, and that a nationalized system could unlock trillions in value just by putting a few hundred extra dollars back into every paycheck. The signal here is clear. The debate over funding open-source AI is not happening on its own merits alone. It is tangled up with bigger questions about economic fairness, public trust, and where society directs scarce resources.
Microsoft has publicly confirmed the existence of the Global Device Identifier, or GDID, a persistent tag assigned to every Windows installation. The confirmation came through a federal complaint filed by U.S. prosecutors against an alleged member of the Scattered Spider hacking group.
Here is what we know. The GDID is generated when Windows is set up with a Microsoft account. Once assigned, it survives Windows updates, and there is no switch to turn it off without breaking core functionality. Privacy advocates are calling this undisableable marker a serious overreach.
The criticism is that the identifier amounts to a hardware-bound fingerprint, tying activity back to a specific machine even when other privacy controls are active. Law enforcement's documented use of the GDID in an active case signals that the identifier is already serving as a forensic tool.
That precedent is likely to intensify scrutiny from regulators, privacy researchers, and enterprise IT teams who now have to weigh compliance risks. Watch for potential policy responses in the European Union, where device identifiers are treated as personal data, and for Microsoft to face fresh demands for an opt-out mechanism or clearer public documentation.
A new open-source codec called MISA-77 is claiming decode speeds more than twice as fast as LZ4, and it achieves better compression ratios on benchmark data at the same time.
Let me put some numbers on that. On the Silesia corpus, MISA 77 at its fastest setting hit 5,219 megabytes per second with a 42.64% ratio. LZ4, by comparison, managed 2,505 megabytes per second at 47.59%.
So MISA 77 is both faster and denser. At its higher effort level, it reached 4,274 megabytes per second with a 39.65% ratio, still well ahead of LZ4's decode speed.
The trade-off is on the compression side. MISA 77 compresses at roughly 51 to 55 megabytes per second, while standard LZ4 hits 371. So encoding is much slower, but the gains on the decode side come from minimizing branches and designing a format that is highly friendly to out-of-order execution on modern cores. The project is early stage, with public code available on GitHub.
A developer writing on mort.coffee is making the case that SQLite should adopt Rust-style additions to manage breaking changes, and the post is gaining real attention on Hacker News.
The core argument targets SQLite's extreme backward compatibility promise. That promise locks in defaults that the author calls harmful, and the most striking example they cite is the default behavior of ignoring foreign key constraints. You can have a database that simply does not enforce referential integrity unless you explicitly turn it on.
An addition model, like the one Rust uses, would let applications opt into safer defaults without breaking existing users. It is a middle ground that has been proven in another ecosystem. You get to evolve the software without abandoning anyone who depends on the old behavior.
The post has drawn significant interest, signaling that there is appetite for a pragmatic path forward in a database engine that is embedded in practically everything. Whether the SQLite team engages with the idea remains to be seen.
And finally, after a year of building mobile apps with Go Mobile, one developer has published a candid retrospective. The biggest win is a seamless shared business logic layer between server and mobile client, with a clean separation from the presentation layer and access to Go's extensive library ecosystem.
But that approach comes with real drawbacks. Performance is a concern. Binary sizes are larger, and overall development complexity increases. The most problematic areas involve bidirectional communication between Go and the native Swift or Kotlin layers, managing asynchronous operations, and debugging tricky issues with time zones and networking.
Despite those challenges, the author notes the business logic can run over any protocol and hints at future potential for AI-driven integrations. It is a mixed report card, but it reflects a broader trend of back-end languages expanding into front-end domains as cross-platform tooling matures.
That closes our look at today's developer stories. Another part follows right after this.
Briar, the peer-to-peer secure messaging app, has announced it is now in maintenance mode. The project update came on July 9, 2026, and it confirms active development of new features has stopped. B. That is a significant shift for a tool that was built specifically for high-risk communication, the kind where privacy isn't just a preference, it's a necessity. A. The team will keep providing essential security updates and bug fixes, so the app is not being abandoned. But the reasons behind the freeze tell a bigger story about the challenges of building decentralized, privacy-first tools. B. Right, and they have been wrestling with some stubborn problems for years. High battery drain on Android, unreliable background operation, no proper account backups, no file attachments. Even basics like adding a contact or communicating offline remain difficult for users. A. They considered a full rebuild. They even explored splitting Briar into two separate apps, one for online use and one for offline. But at the end of the day, the project didn't have the funding to sustain that kind of development. B. And here's the detail that really stings. the developers were reluctant to go looking for new money because they couldn't point to a clear long-term plan. It's a catch-22. You need funding to build the plan, but you need the plan to justify the funding. A. It highlights a real sustainability crisis for privacy-focused communication tools in a market that is dominated by centralized, well-funded platforms.
Separately, an open-source project called WeatherGotchi is taking a completely different approach to environmental awareness. It turns local climate data into a Tamagotchi-style virtual pet. B. So instead of a dashboard full of numbers and charts, you get a pixel art creature whose mood literally changes with the weather. That's a clever way to make data emotionally legible. A. It was built by developer Michael Manning and is hosted on GitHub. The setup connects temperature and humidity sensors to a Raspberry Pi, then uses an e-ink display to show the creature. B. E-ink is a smart choice for this. Low power, always visible, and it gives the whole thing that understated, non-intrusive feel. A. When conditions are pleasant, the pet looks happy. If things turn extreme, it starts to look distressed or even sick. The goal is to make abstract sensor data harder to ignore than a conventional dashboard. B. And there is a nostalgia factor here that can't be overlooked. Tamagotchis triggered genuine emotional attachment. People felt responsible for them. If WeatherGotchi can tap into even a fraction of that, it could shift how people relate to local climate data. A. The code is publicly available, and the hardware relies on widely available e-paper modules and low-cost sensors, so hobbyists can replicate the whole setup. Early reactions on Hacker News show real interest in blending nostalgic play with climate awareness.
Now let's talk about Telegram's infrastructure, because two separate pieces surfaced recently that reveal something interesting about the company's engineering philosophy. B. One piece dates back to 2022, and it covers the company's data center operations. Telegram runs 5 homegrown data centers, designated DC1 through DC5. A. DC1 and DC3 are in Miami. DC2 and DC4 sit in Amsterdam, and DC5 is in Singapore. When you register an account, it gets pinned to one of those specific data centers at creation. B. And if your client connects to the wrong one, the server flat out rejects it and forces a switch. That is an unconventional setup compared to how most cloud-native services handle geography. A. There is also a notorious reputation attached to DC5 in the Chinese Telegram community. It suffers from frequent outages that disrupt access for users pinned there. B. On the backend side, the second piece covers Telegram's built-in serverless runtime for bots and mini-apps. Developers write plain JavaScript modules and deploy them with a single command. No servers to provision, no containers to keep alive, no manual scaling. A. It includes a managed database layer with declarative table definitions, though it enforces no foreign keys, which is a notable design choice. And there is a local test mode so developers can verify behavior without a live deployment. B. Taken together, these two choices, self-operated multi-region data centers alongside a zero-ops serverless platform, reflect a distinct philosophy. Tight geographic control paired with minimal operational overhead for developers.
Sticking with developer creativity, let's revisit Voxatron. It is a fantasy console from Lexaloff through the same developer behind Pico-8, and it flips the pixel art constraint on its head. B. Instead of 2D sprites, everything in Voxatron is built out of colorful 3D cubes. Characters, worlds, projectiles, all of it. The alpha is still publicly available as version 0.3.6. A. It ships with an arena shooter and an action-adventure cartridge, but the real draw is the full set of design tools baked right in. Users can create their own animations, music, pickups, and entire levels. B. And that framework has sparked a small but persistent community on the Lexaloft BBS. There is a growing collection of user-made cartridges that keeps it alive. A. By locking creators into a chunky, low-resolution voxel aesthetic, Voxatron forces a distinct visual identity. It separates itself from mainstream game engines entirely. B. That is the interesting lesson here. Strict technical limitations do not always stifle creativity. Sometimes they actively nurture a dedicated artistic niche, and Voxatron is proof that can last well beyond the initial release.
Here is a lighter piece, but it's the kind of data curiosity that the Hacker News community loves. Someone queried 23 years of story titles against the ClickHouse public dataset to find out which numbers appear most often. B, and the winner is 2. It shows up in about 119,000 titles, narrowly followed by 3 at 114,000, and 1 also at around 114,000. A. Then there is a drop. Number 5 appears 82,000 times, then 4 at 63,000, and 0 at 61,000. The distribution is not uniform at all. B. The most popular year-tagged number is 2024, found in roughly 23,400 titles. 2023 and 2025 trail close behind, which makes sense given the dataset's recency. A. Some numbers owe their frequency almost entirely to clickbait-style listicles. 14, 17, 31, and 51 often headline those X things you should know posts. B. And 0 and 1 dominate thanks to the classic X to 0 or X to 1 title formulas that are everywhere in technical writing. A. The analysis also notes a curious community preference for prime-like odd numbers over rounder even ones, which is the kind of lighthearted meta question that keeps these investigations fun.
On a completely different note, a general manager at a car dealership in Michigan decided his midlife crisis did not need a Corvette. He bought a 2024 Toyota Corolla SE hatchback instead and poured $12,000 in modifications into it. B. That is the Baby Corolla GR, and the whole project prioritizes handling over raw power. Eibach lowering springs tighten the stance and reduce body roll. Carbon fiber look mirror caps and 4-inch exhaust tips openly mock street racer culture. A. He added a roof rack, a toe strap, and ceramic tints to complete the look. The CVT acts as a built-in governor that prevents reckless speeding, and he says the driving experience feels, quote, like a video game on curvy roads. B. The owner himself admits it is, quote, so stupid. But that is exactly the point. This is a playful, low-stakes build that questions what automotive self-expression can be when a sensible economy car becomes the punchline. A. And there are future signals worth watching here. The owner is considering autocross experiments, which might reveal whether this modded Corolla's handling compromises daily comfort. That tension between track readiness and everyday usability is the real test.
A foundational paper from 1982 is drawing renewed attention in technical circles. It is called The Well-Calibrated Bayesian, written by Philip Doed, and it clarifies something that is easy to misunderstand about Bayesian forecasting. B. Calibration means that when someone says an event has a 20% probability, that event actually occurs 20% of the time. Sounds simple, but it is a property that is easy to claim and hard to verify. A. And here is the key insight from the paper. Calibration is desirable, but it is not sufficient on its own. A forecaster could be perfectly calibrated while still producing unhelpful predictions. B. The classic example. Correctly stating overall rainfall frequency while always missing weekend forecasts. The numbers add up, but the predictions are useless for planning a picnic. A. In the Bayesian framework, coherence requires that all stated beliefs obey the laws of probability. If you assert a 40% chance of an event, the probability of it not happening must be exactly 60%. B. Dowd argues that a Bayesian who honestly reports subjective probabilities and follows standard updating rules will automatically become well-calibrated in the long run. That connects personal uncertainty to real-world frequencies without requiring an external true model. A. Commentators today frame the work as a classic reminder that Bayesian thinking is not only about updating beliefs, it's about transparently quantifying and conveying genuine uncertainty.
Finally, digital clocks. They usually get a functional free pass, but a new community-curated collection at clocks.dev makes the case for the screen as a serious design surface. B. This showcase bundles dozens of unusual interfaces from different eras and makers, treating the clock as a canvas for typography, data art, and personal expression. One standout is the number field concept, a spatial 12-column layout that turns a numeric readout into something closer to a textured landscape. A. Some users noted it would be perfect in a 24-hour form. And this is not just a gallery to browse. The trend is driving real desk setups. Several builders are experimenting with dedicated hardware to display these designs, from ESP32 microcontrollers to repurposed old phones. B. A practical alternative surfaced in the discussion. Use your current phone on a MagSafe or Qi2 stand. It puts time and notifications in one vertical spot, reduces desk clutter, and lets you see the clock from across the room. A. The biggest signal here is not nostalgia for retro LED aesthetics, though that is certainly part of the appeal. It is a growing demand to reclaim our glowing rectangles as tiny, intentional pieces of ambient design.
Arda Tatasi published a piece reflecting on what it takes to free large language models from the chat pane. After watching what worked and what didn't across the maker community, they landed on a universal harness with four essential properties. B. The first is that the harness has to feel intuitively natural to the agent, so the model doesn't burn tokens just reorienting itself every time it interacts with it. A. Right. And the second is transparency. Everything has to be visible for self-development, self-healing, or post-mortem audits when something goes wrong. B. Third, the harness needs to stay as lean and flexible as possible. And fourth, it has to survive errors, survive updates, and avoid memory corruption or degradation over time. A. Tatasi's core argument is that as models get smarter, the real battle isn't capability, it's reducing the cognitive load, measured in tokens, that the harness places on the bot. B. So the vision isn't a complex scaffold that does everything, it's a minimal, transparent layer that gets out of the way and lets the model drive hardware experimentation across diverse prototyping tasks without friction.
Fictional essay that's resonating widely. Developer Ramon Van Sprundel writes candidly about living with a severe depression that is derailing his career and says he is slowly learning to live with it, but at least he is not alone. B. He traces the struggle back to his first internship. He was filled with excitement at the start, but that gave way to demotivation, and he initially blamed school for how he was feeling. A. The real root, he now says, was a personal failure to communicate. He never told anyone what was happening, assuming people would notice his declining performance and mood. They didn't. B. And that's the core of his argument. He sees the tech industry as often rewarding exactly that kind of isolation and overwork, drawing a direct line from poor communication to deteriorating mental health. A. His essay pushes back hard against the tendency to valorize silent suffering. The message is that mental health has to be prioritized, and open communication isn't just a soft skill, it's a critical survival tool for developers.
A 2023 study published in the journal Sleep is changing how researchers think about what matters most for long-term health. The finding? Sleep regularity, going to bed and waking up at consistent times, is a stronger predictor of all-cause mortality risk than total sleep duration. B. This wasn't based on self-reports. Researchers analyzed over 60,000 UK biobank participants using wrist-worn accelerometers to measure something called the Sleep Regularity Index. A. People with the most irregular sleep patterns had roughly a 20 to 40% higher risk of dying during the follow-up period compared to those with average regularity, even after controlling for age, sex, lifestyle factors, and total time asleep. B. And the effect size was comparable to or larger than the risk associated with short or long sleep duration. It held across cardiovascular mortality and cancer mortality separately. A. The shift in thinking is significant. Public health messaging has long focused on encouraging more sleep, but this evidence suggests emphasizing a stable sleep-wake schedule may be more practical and more protective. B. The researchers note the study is observational, so causation isn't confirmed, but the objective measurement and large sample size strengthen confidence. One open question is how shift work, parenting demands, or social jet lag might be addressed under this new evidence.
Finally, a security demonstration that raises fresh questions about AI memory systems. Researcher Ayush Pal showed how prompt engineering can extract supposedly protected personal information from Anthropic's Claude, even when the conversation appears entirely innocuous. B. Paul crafted a subtle interaction that left no visible trace of malicious intent, yet by the end, Claude had silently revealed his full name, his employer, Beam, his hometown of Charlotte, and answers to his security questions. A. His point is that AI assistants have quietly accumulated information-dense profiles on millions of people, often holding more sensitive details than a typical password manager. B. Despite significant investment in model safety and alignment, this memory heist shows defenses can be circumvented through subtle prompt manipulation alone. A. Is Givitz the kid? The work underscores a gap in current approaches. Output filtering alone isn't enough. The argument is that security-specific hardening of memory systems is needed, especially as models become more integrated into daily tool use. B. And Paul warns that future attacks could target deeper data, financial details, private conversations, as AI memory expands. The takeaway: the memory layer itself has to be treated as a security boundary.
That's a wrap on today's show. From open source AI pushing boundaries with Grok Build and fresh models like Codex Micro and Inkling, to the wild world of AI voice fraud that can pull off a theft in 3 seconds flat, it's been a packed ride.
Yeah, and the EU court ruling against OpenAI is a reminder that the legal landscape is shifting as fast as the tech. Plus, that Windows device identifier we can't disable? A lot of folks are going to have strong feelings about that one.
Definitely. On the lighter side, we saw Firefox running inside a browser tab thanks to WebAssembly, a climate change tamagotchi called WeatherGotchi, and someone turning a Corolla into a midlife crisis masterpiece.
And don't forget the cult classic Duskers getting a sequel. Terminal horror lives on. We also talked about sleep regularity actually mattering more for your health than total hours, which I'm going to remind myself of tonight.
Same here. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us. We'll be back soon with another roundup. Until then, take care out there.